Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
I'm so confused.
Welcome to my general state of existence.
Yeah, all right. I'm gonna have to do a little blind news item.
Oh, man, true. God, Jesus.
Well, hello, I'm prepared, and I'm Kimberly Adams, and welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
It's not that I'm not prepared, I was just doing something else, man.
You're multitasking,
anyway.
Good job.
Yes. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thank you all for coming on the pod. Well, this is Friday afternoon, Economics on Tap. Whether you're on the live stream or on the Discord or actually listening later on doing that time shift thing, we are glad to have you with us.
Yes, and I should apologize to those on the Fan Run Discord because I'm on a different computer today, so I cannot see what y'all are saying. But I can see, yes, as Debbie points out, I am in the studio today, so you will not get to see Jasper jumping up on the bed behind me. I am in Marketplace's Washington, D.C. bureau, which we occasionally actually use. Yes.
Did you see the picture from the New York bureau yesterday in Amir's note? New York bureau everybody was there. It was crazy.
It was a lot of people standing very close to each other.
There was a lot of people. Well, that was my first thought. Actually, my first thought was, man, I don't recognize half of these people. The other one was, there's one mask and a lot of people. But I don't know what we do about that.
What are you drinking?
I am having a Santa Monica Brew Works Head in the Clouds Double IPA. I really shouldn't be having a double because I haven't been drinking a lot lately, and this may put me to sleep actually in about an hour, but that's fine. Whatever.
Is that a terrible thing, though? It's Friday.
No. It just makes me feel like an old fart, that's all. But anyway.
It's only
4 o'clock in the afternoon here.
If it makes you feel any better, I'm having a giant mug of peppermint tea with honey just because I may have gone a little too hard last night, so gotta take a break.
That's a story for another podcast. All right. This being Friday, we have checked what people are drinking. We're going to do some news and then a little half full, half empty, I believe, right? Oh, I'm stealing your words.
Yeah.
There we go.
I had stopped reading them. That's okay. Okay. Yes. But let's do that news. And yes. I should say,
right,
I will
ahead.
Read
you
the part
first.
That says the half full, half empty is going to be hosted by Drew Jostad, who we love and wonderful.
Yep.
Okay. I am checking back in on, I'm obsessed with all of these cases being tried in D.C. For the January 6th insurrectionist rioters, whatever you would like to call them, or seditious conspirators, apparently.
I like to call them
today,
that, actually. Yes.
Yes, today, the second member of the Oath Keepers group that was facing a seditious conspiracy charge for the role in January 6th pled guilty and is preparing to cooperate with prosecutors. Brian Ulrich, who's one of 11 of these Oath Keepers, and I'm reading from the Politico article here, again by my guy, Kyle Cheney, who is facing these extremely serious charges of seditious conspiracy, which is basically like the worst, facing up to 6 years in prison, maybe more, depending on how well he cooperates. And just as a reminder, this Oath Keepers group wasn't just like a part of the crowd storming the Capitol. These guys planned their trip, brought weapons, rode up to the Capitol basically on golf carts. And if you saw Some of the images from the attack on the Capitol, where it was like a line of guys with their arms, their hands on each other, and they were just sort of weaving through the crowd and broken. That's these guys. And they had real plans. They were like stashing weapons in Virginia. And this really, I'm sorry, somebody said that they're amazed that I can keep my face in front when my eyes are on the screen to the right. And that is what actually distracted me. Okay, many screens. But yes, so these are the guys who are accused of, you know, really making a plan to overthrow the government in a violent way. And now two of them have pled guilty. So that partners with another story that came out today, I think first reported by CNN. So remember, the January 6th committee got all of those text messages from Mark Meadows as part of their investigation. I mean, I think, and so CNN obtained many of these messages. And apparently, Mark Meadows, White House Chief of Staff under Donald Trump, and Sean Hannity of Fox were exchanging dozens of text messages between Election Day and the, you know, day of the inaugurations, the inauguration. And many of those were perpetuating the big lie, encouraging Trump to, you know, believe that this was a fraud and a fake. And, you know, that's not what media is supposed to do. To put it mildly.
We have to, the whole idea that, you know, and I don't know if you saw the one today that Maria Bartiromo, who used to be a reasonably respected business journalist on CNBC, she went to Fox, and whatever happened to Maria Bartiromo, she was like feeding Trump questions and answers through Mark Meadows for appearances on her show. And I'm like, can we stop calling them journalists, please?
So while we're on this topic, you tweeted about this, and I have strong feelings on
today?
It also. No. This is about, I'm moving on to something else. This thing that has been happening of journalists saving extraordinarily newsworthy details for
books. Unbelievable.
I get so angry every single time.
It's outrageous.
I see this. It's like, What do you think your job is exactly? And I've heard the argument.
So let's why don't you frame it? Why don't you ground it for people in the specific instance that is so outrageous right now?
Well, I can't even remember the latest one. There's been so many.
The Mitch McConnell there was one, right from like 5 or 6 days ago, or any of the McCarthy tapes, right? So
or
two
the
people,
Donald
Jonathan
Trump
Martin
flushing
from the New York Times, right. Right. Flushing papers down the toilet. That was Maggie Haberman. But within the last 10 days, Jonathan Martin from The New York Times and Alex Burns is his last name, also from The New York Times, are out flogging their book, right? They're going to have a book coming out, I think, on Monday. It's called This Shall Not Pass, and it's about the events of January 6th and leading up to it and all this jazz. And they have broken in the last 10 days some incredible news. The lying of Kevin McCarthy, who's going to be the Speaker of the House come next January. Mitch McConnell saying on the evening of the 6th of January, in almost as many words, I'm going to get the hell rid of Donald Trump. They held all that. They had it for a year and a half, and they held it for their book. And I don't understand.
I mean, I've heard the argument that they're saying people would not have given us this information or given us these details or given us these interviews if we were going to release it right away. And the only way I got the information is because I held it for the book. But it makes me feel so gross inside. And
it's
gross, right? Yeah, I don't generally get in the habit of bashing other journalists.
Trusts the media. But you wonder why nobody trusts the media. Honestly.
I shall descend from my soapbox now. You go ahead.
All right. Is that it? Do you want more, or are you good?
No, it's just going to be continued ranting and raving into the abyss. Go ahead.
Okay, fair enough. So I have three items, of which one is genuine and two are just kind of anecdotal. The first is this. Oh, hello, Elon Musk, who is pledging a large chunk of his Tesla shares as collateral against loans that he's taking out to buy Twitter. Elon Musk, in the 3 days between Tuesday and Thursday of this week, sold something like 9.5 million Tesla shares, netting $8.5 billion. And I just think you got to keep an eye on Tesla as the prospect of Musk having to make good on these loans comes to fruition as the deal closes. That's item number one. Just keep an eye on it.
Wait, I don't understand. Like, are you saying that he's at risk of losing control of Tesla because he has to sell so much stock?
Well, so here's the deal. No, he's not going to lose control of Tesla because he has sold 9.5 million shares. He has 170 million shares, right?
Okay.
So that's not the issue. The issue is that in order to guarantee the loans that he personally will have to provide to make up his half of the $44 billion purchase price of Twitter, Musk has to pledge as collateral his shares. And here's the deal. He's got to come up with something like $20 billion. The catch is that when you're using shares as collateral for loans, it's usually a 50% ratio. That is to say 2-to-1. In other words, for however much money you want to borrow against your loans, you have to pledge twice that dollar amount in shares. And that's just a lot of money. And so he's going to have to sell those shares, conceivably, and that drives Tesla's share price down, and that will piss off Tesla shareholders. That's a bad thing for Tesla. So just keep an eye on that. It's very inside baseball dynamics, but it's interesting. Number two, I was driving home this afternoon from downtown LA, and as a good public radio doobie, I turned on NPR at the top of the hour to get the newscast. And on the newscast, I hear Rob Stein talk about Moderna asking the FDA to authorize a vaccine for kids 6 months and up, right? Which is great because I cannot imagine being the child, the parent of a child 5 or under and not being able to vaccinate your kids, okay? That's huge. And I'm so glad this is happening. But one of the things Rob said in that report is the FDA's advisory committee will meet on June 8th. June 8th. And I don't understand. And this is a legit question. And if I've got epidemiologist friends out there or FDA friends out there, tell me, make me smart at marketplace.org. Why does it take 5 weeks to set up a meeting to review something that we know is desperately needed? Literally just a question. So that's it. And then my real news item is this. So I'm walking the dogs this morning and I turn on, as I not infrequently do when I'm walking the dogs, the daily podcast from the New York Times. And I've commented on the host of that program many a time, the original host of that program many a time. But today it was David Sanger, a widely respected, and I personally admire David's work in the national security field. And David was talking about the next phase in the war in Ukraine, what the Russians are going to do, and where things are going to go from here. And at the end, they started talking about Russia, talking about so much more, Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, talking about using potentially nuclear weapons. Well, let me rephrase that. He didn't talk about using nuclear weapons. He said this: it would be a shame if this war turned nuclear, basically, is what Lavrov said. And David, at the end of the Daily today, said this: I've been doing this now for more than a quarter century in Washington. I've had more discussions with people in the United States government about what they are looking for in the way of nuclear movement in Russia. That is to say, Russians moving nuclear weapons into or near Ukraine. More discussions of that in the past 3 months than I have in the past 2.5 decades. And that to me is scary as hell, because David is a very sober guy, very experienced, does not hyperbolize. And that's just scary as hell. And we should all be just worried about that.
And apparently grateful he decided to tell us now.
Yeah. Well, that's right. So look, that's a downer, and I get it, but man, that's bad news. But when David Sanger's worried, I'm worried. That's what I got.
Well,
how's that peppermint tea going down? Is that helping you out with the news today?
No, not particularly. No, but I think Drew can save us.
Yes, Drew. There we go.
Yes. Okay.
My goodness gracious.
Margie's asking in the chat, is this hollowed out shell Friday?
Yeah, right? No, we're not doing it. Oh, God.
We are, are we half full or half empty on a nuclear war? Don't answer that. Okay.
Yeah,
that is the game that we're going to play. Half full or half empty,
yes.
Hosted by our very own Drew Jostad. Take it away, Drew.
All right. Are you half full or half empty on Apple? Buying back $90 billion in shares.
I mean, half full in that I think we're getting ready to see a deluge of companies doing this as they sort of double down for the coming recession.
Yeah, and companies have a ton of money. Look, it's a really bad look, actually, for Apple, as much attention as there is now on the rich getting richer. And what this does is enriches the very small slice of the American public that actually has substantial holdings in the stock market. Tim Cook should have done something else. They have so much money. They have like $250 billion in the bank. I'm half empty.
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, like so many companies are getting ready to just give massive dividends to their shareholders.
Yep.
And
yep.
The economic inequality that we've been seeing over the course of the pandemic expanding, like it's just going to get worse because, as you said, there's such a small sliver 100%. Of American society that is going to gain that wealth, but it's going to be such an exponentially large amount of money accruing to so few people.
Yep.
Okay, we're really digging into this downer stuff.
We're spiraling. Let us not spiral. Drew.
Okay, Jesus. I'll do my best. Are you half full or half empty on Fidelity offering Bitcoin as an option for your 401k?
Half empty.
All the way empty. Oh my God. So... Look, Fidelity is the largest retirement plan provider in the United States. It also provides retirement plans for American Public Media, the parent company and corporate overlord of Marketplace Productions. And they said this week, we're going to let you put up to 20% of your retirement contribution into Bitcoin. Okay, Bitcoin in one day this week was down 9%. So if you're willing to take your paycheck in Bitcoin, if you're willing to risk your retirement in Bitcoin, sure, do that. But, oh, by the way, consult your own financial advisor. But come on, you guys. Half empty.
I mean, it was kind of inevitable, I think.
Oh, totally inevitable. Yes.
But perhaps having it in these types of accounts now is going to actually give regulators a bit more, you know, kind of power to monitor and, you know, regulate it, perhaps, maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm not even going to examine that facial expression.
It's all right. Okay. It's all good.
Next.
Giving it a little script on the neck. Next.
Next topic. According to a survey from ADP, 64% of people would consider quitting their job if they were asked to go back full time. Are you half full or half empty?
Does that mean like going back in the office full time or like?
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, back in the office.
Half full. I saw what's his name? Brian Chesky, I think, of Airbnb tweeting
CEO of Airbnb,
today. Yeah, that they're basically like you can work wherever you want forever. And, you know, we're going to, they're basically redesigning the way their company works. We're going to have meetings, you know, like every so often where your team meets together in person, but for the most part, scatter throughout the world and, you know, my blessings upon you. And very key, he's not going to change people's salaries based on where
they are. That's the key thing. Yes.
That's the key thing. And I think that that distinction, because lots of companies are saying their people can work remotely, which is great. But that salary differential is going to become a sticking point, and the employers that level that out are going to have a competitive advantage, I think.
Yeah, totally. And here's the question, right? Should your value to the company be where you are, right? And your value to the company is reflected in your paycheck, right? Should it be where you are, or should it be the work you do? That's fundamentally the question, I think. You know?
Yeah. So in terms of like that many people saying that they'd quit if they have to go back to the office full time, I mean, absolutely, because they have options.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in such a tight labor market, they don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
That. What Kimberly said.
All right. I'm going to try and get through this next topic without gagging. Are you half full or half empty on a cereal by Tropicana specifically made to be eaten with orange juice, not milk.
Well, so all right. So first of all, raise your hand if you have not accidentally poured orange juice on your cereal. I have. I've actually also poured coffee on my cereal by mistake, but that's a whole different thing. I've done that.
I've done that.
Although, you have not done that?
No.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, I've done it, and it's gross, so cereal should be eaten with milk. That's where I am. That's what I got. I'm half empty on cereal with orange juice, speaking from personal experience.
Okay.
Clearly, you're more coherent in the mornings than I am. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, maybe. I don't know. You have to get up a lot earlier than I
mean,
do, though.
Yeah. Well, I
you have
do,
to get up
I'm
a lot earlier than
way.
I
That's
do.
All.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Is that it, Drew? We're, like, going on forever today.
Well, I assume you're half empty on that, Kimberly.
It's our show.
I actually don't care. Sure, half empty.
just for the record, sure. I got yelled at when I did that one too many times. I got yelled at by our boss. I need you
That's
to take a stand. Don't just say I don't care.
I deploy it selectively.
Oh, man.
Okay, last one. Apropos of nothing in particular, right. I assume, are you half full or half empty on cruises?
Yeah. Whatever Kimberly says, I will say. Because I'm no dope.
All the way empty. All the way empty. All the way empty. So empty.
Yeah. Kimberly just got back from an extended family cruise. Let's just say that, shall we?
And let's just say that it is highly unlikely anyone in my family will ever be cruising with that particular company again.
Yeah. But, just to be clear, just because this is matriarchally driven in your family, from what I understand, you're going to be going on another cruise.
The family will. I'm going to do my best not to.
Big talk. All right,
it's not just my mother. It's also my sister. They love it. They love it.
Fair enough.
Right.
Fair enough.
That is it for us today. Before we end, we want to say a special thank you to Marque Green, whose name I usually say right all the time. Marque Green, who is a marketplace producer who's been working on our show the last few months. He's going to work on another marketplace show. This is Uncomfortable, the podcast that are the wonderful Rima Kreis hosts. But we wanted to thank him just for his time with us. Thank you, Marque.
Lots of hard work that came from him, for sure.
Yes. And we'll be back Monday.
Till then, though, if you've got any questions, send us a voice memo or an email, makemesmartatmarketplace.org. Leave us a voice message. We're at 508-827-6278. That is 508-UB-SMART.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera and Mark A. Green. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie. Today's episode was engineered by Drew Jostad, and the senior producer is Bridget Bodner.
The team behind our Friday game is Stephen Bion, Mel Rosenberg, and Emily McCune. Theme music was written by Drew Jostad for that game. The director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
Everyone's in the chat with my sister asking her what happened.
Oh my God, are they really? Oh my God, that's really funny. And she's like, nope.
Oh no, looks like she's about to spill the tea that I have.
Right, here comes the well. Oh, that's pretty funny.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.